Greetings. Welcome to St. Dominic's Weekly. This is Father Michael. Today, a wonderful guest. I have Brother Michael James Rivera, who is newly come onto the staff here at St. Dominic's as our Director for Community Outreach and Community Services, in a particular way, our Lima Center, and for those projects, we're reaching out to the homeless and those who are in need. Brother Michael James comes to us from having been the webmaster for our Dominican province. And so now he transitions, and he's been living here at St. Dominic's for a couple of years, and now takes on this new role here in the parish. And so we get a little bit about his own story, his discernment, not to be a priest, but to be a professed religious Dominican for his life. And then finally, a little bit about his ministry and his hopes and expectations and his visioning for the future. And then a little bit of fun facts about Brother Michael James and his contribution to the culinary life of the Priory as well at the end. So I hope you enjoy today's show, whether you're on the go or taking it slow. Many blessings as you enjoy today's show. Welcome to St. Dominic's Weekly. I'm Father Michael, and I'm joined by Brother Michael James, who is the new minister for our community outreach and services here at St. Dominic's. So I'm delighted to be joined by Brother Michael James. Welcome.
Hi, Father Michael. Thanks for having me.
It's great to have you here. And today, in a very special way, we are celebrating the Feast of the Exaltation of the Cross, and we're taping this, but in terms of our Dominican life, we've got the 10 new novices, and we've talked to had the opportunity to talk to Father Anthony, a novice master. Was he your novice master as well?
Yeah, Father Anthony was my novice master 11 years ago.
11 years ago. How big was your class?
There were only four in my class.
Okay.
So a bit smaller than this smaller. Year.
Very good. And are you the only one who's ended up making solemn vows?
Or? No, there are two in my class. So Father Gabriel Mosier, who's up in Portland.
Nice. Who we had on the podcast. We had
been on the podcast before.
We had an archangel debate.
And then Father Justin, who's actually in a different class than mine originally, but he made solemn vows with Father Gabriel and myself.
Who's now the prior.
Yeah.
Wow. So full circle. So welcome. So maybe just to let folks know kind of just where you're from, how you found the Dominicans, just if you will, the basic contours of what led you to be in the Order of Preachers.
Sure. Sounds good. So I actually grew up here in the Bay Area in Union City and Fremont. For a long time, my family lived in Niles, which is where they would film all the Charlie Chaplin films.
Oh, yeah, that's what I've heard, yeah.
Going around all the little antique fairs and things like that, and you see these places when you would watch the old movies. When I was young, my parents and I would watch American movie classics a lot, so you could see these movies and then actually go to the place where it was filmed, so that was really fun.
Peter Graves, right, was the host of that one?
Yes,
it was the original.
Yeah.
This is Peter Graves.
So I grew up there and went to elementary school, middle school, high school in the area. And then I went to St. Mary's College in Moraga, which is where I met Sister Ingrid Clemenson, who's a Dominican sister of Mission San Jose. She was in campus ministry at the time. And so that was kind of my first introduction to Dominicans, the sisters at least.
Oh, nice.
And
because there were no Dominicans, because there's also a collaboration, has been at times, with Dominican fathers just being around the campus, but not at that point.
No. So okay. At that point, there hadn't been any friars for a few years, but I remember watching a video one time with Father Patrick LaBelle, who passed away a few years ago. He was celebrating Mass, and so Sister Ingrid pointed out, oh, that's Father Patrick, he's a good friend of mine, and so there was a connection with Dominicans. There was a Dominican actually still working there, Father John Morris.
Well, sure, yeah, of course.
Who wasn't involved in campus ministry, but was a professor, and who I took for a class one January.
Oh, really? So you had him for class?
I did.
Did you really?
For,
oh, wow.
What was the class now? Oh, it was actually...
Memorable. It was memorable, whatever it was.
Well, I can't remember the title. I remember the subject.
It was
actually different leaders in Catholic social justice.
Oh, nice.
So looking at Dorothy Day, Cardinal Romero, a number of these different figures, and just what their perspective was on serving the community and the faith and things like that. So connecting all these things. And I was actually in a class with a number of nursing students. So when we got on the subject of euthanasia, it was really interesting because you had these nursing students who are experiencing, working with the dying every day, and talking about the faith and what these different Catholic figures had to say about it. It was really an interesting conversation.
Because it was real for them, and it wasn't just an abstract exercise,
right.
But for them it was a sense of personal in terms of their experience and how to you know, kind of live that faith in a way that honors life and its sanctity. Wow, that's, and Father John Nau is our director for social justice for the province.
Yeah.
So wow. So I did not know that. So it wasn't your own vocation came a little bit later.
Yeah. So my senior year of college, I was trying to figure out what I was going to do next. I ended up going to Minneapolis for a year, serving with LaSallian volunteers at De La Salle High School in Minneapolis. So I worked in campus ministry. I taught scripture, and I really enjoyed it. I really enjoyed sharing our faith not only with my students but also with other faculty and staff members, some of whom weren't Catholic. So after Mass, which the whole school went to, they'd be like, so what was that thing the priest did in the middle of Mass?
Yeah.
I was like, oh, okay, let's talk about the Eucharist a little bit.
There you go. The basics.
The basics, yeah. So I really enjoyed that, and I realized how much I enjoyed sharing the faith, not only in the classroom, but just in one-on-one conversations. And then a big part of my job there was actually helping the students find community service opportunities, because all the students had a community service requirement, a certain number of hours. So I was working with all kinds of organizations outside of the school to find opportunities for the kids to be doing service, you know, and not just going someplace and filing things, but actually interacting with people. So,
well, we call this foreshadowing when it comes to when it comes to current days. So that was in Minnesota.
Yes, yeah, that was nice. Minnesota. I came back to the Bay Area because it was way too cold, and everybody laughed because probably October I started wearing thermals, and they're like, "It's only 50 degrees."
Oh my gosh!
And I'm like, it's snowing outside.
California boy meets
right.
the Midwest.
Meets the Midwest.
It's the winters of the Midwest.
So I came back here and I started working at Holy Rosary in Antioch, which is a parish the Dominicans used to be at.
Yep.
And I was the youth minister there for about 4 years. And that was really when I started discerning life with the Dominicans. So different friars there. Father Jordan was my pastor and boss. And then we had different brothers come through on their residency, their pastoral year. So Father James Moore, many people know. During that time, I had told him I was thinking about a vocation and maybe coming and visiting the Dominicans. So he signed me up for one of our come and see weekends without telling me after the fact.
That sounds like Father James.
Yes. And he said, oh, by the way, you're driving someone else, so you can't back out.
That is classic Father James Moore.
Classic Father James. Yeah. So I went to the weekend. I loved it. Just the sense of humor of the brothers and the fraternal life and their zeal. I grew up as an only child, so it was my first real experience to have a bunch of guys around who were brothers, really, to one another, you know, experiencing that communal life. And that really drew me in, especially as I was discerning. I remember after that going to a diocesan come and see weekend and just not really feeling that at all. I mean, obviously the seminarians lived together, but it wasn't the same experience and just knowledge of, we make vows together as Dominicans that the seminarians don't. And so it's just a different way of life.
Yeah. And that connection to that community.
Yeah.
Kind of
that,
thing.
So the community has always been a big draw for me. So it took me a few more years of discerning, paying off bills and debts. And so I always tell vocation candidates now, do not rack up the credit card bills.
Nope.
Do what you can to avoid that.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then I finally applied and was accepted.
Nice.
And so I entered in 2007. That was my novice year. And then I've been a Dominican ever since.
Ever since.
Thanks be to God.
Amen. It's certainly been a one. You brought a lot of life and fraternity to the brotherhood. And this last couple of years living with you has really, I hadn't lived with you before, so it's been great to have you in community. Maybe talk a little bit about, because I'm sure you get, you know, as a Dominicans, most of our Dominicans, we are all called certainly to the fraternity of the life, but also to the priesthood. So we're all each other father, but amongst the brotherhood, we know each other as brothers. But I'm sure people will call you Father Michael James.
Yes,
but you're not a priest. And maybe talk
quite
about
a bit, yeah.
Yeah, and when you entered, did you enter with that sense that you were called more to the fraternity and the brotherhood and not necessarily to ordained ministry? Or how did that work out for you in your own discernment?
Yes, so when I originally entered, I was actually on the clerical track. So I was planning to be a priest.
Okay.
And I hadn't really thought, I mean, I knew that we had brothers.
Sure.
And we have some great examples. People here at St. Dominic's would know Brother Daniel Thomas. They would know Brother Gregory.
Yes.
And different brothers that we've had come through over the years. So I knew we had them, but it wasn't really in my mind at the mm-hmm. time. But as I lived our life and discerned more, a few years in, after I left here and went over to the Studentate, I just really wasn't sure what I was doing. I tell people usually that the call to the priesthood, if you kind of think of it as a candle, it was flickering, really flickering. You know, the wind was kind of strong, and I just said, I don't know where I'm going. I don't know why I'm doing this. I love the life, but I'm not sure I'm called to the priesthood.
Yeah.
So I did my pastoral year, my residency year up in Salt Lake at St. Catherine of Siena Newman Center, and was working in campus ministry there, working with the young adults, doing lots of different projects and activities. And I just really enjoyed it. But I enjoyed living as a brother. Everybody knew I was a brother on my residency year. They didn't see me as a priest. They didn't ask me for sacraments or anything like that.
Yeah.
They just would come into my office and chat or say they needed help with prayers or working on a retreat. And I worked with a youth group. Again, that seems to always happen.
Young people are drawn.
People
yeah.
find out that I worked with youth ministry, and they're like, oh, can you help with this? So I enjoyed that very much, but I realized as I was there, it was the fraternity of our life. It was that living in community, praying together, studying together, all these things that I really loved, and not necessarily the sacraments, to do sacramental ministry.
Yeah.
So right, I tell people a lot, I love teaching people about the sacraments and helping them come to a better appreciation, and obviously going to Mass and confession and all these things.
Yeah.
But through my discernment, I realized I'm not the one who has to be the minister of that.
Yeah.
I love helping people get to that.
Yeah. And I have to say for myself, having the brotherhood discerned specifically by folks like yourself is a wonderful witness and reminder to me that of the power of the life itself, right? To not necessarily see my vocation only in terms of the identity of sacramental ministry, which is certainly part of my vocation, but it can't be everything about the vocation. There's a deeper sensibility of the fraternity, the prayer, and the community that lends towards that sacramental mm-hmm. ministry. But without that, if you will, foundation or that connection, I don't know if I, honestly, to put it the other way around, I don't know if I could be a secular priest, a diocesan mm-hmm. priest. And so having the brotherhood and folks like yourself who make that discernment, even though it's not quite always understood, is really a living witness. I think it's a powerful kind of witness for us all.
Yeah, I think sometimes people see our communities, Dominican communities, and think, oh, it's like a bunch of diocesan priests living together.
Yes.
But it's really not.
No.
It's completely different in terms of the life that we vowed ourselves to.
That's right.
Vowing ourselves to each other, not knowing the future, not knowing who our superior is going to be
or
who our provincial is going to be.
Exactly.
But always being of support to one another.
No, that's right. And in a sense, having that deeper bond, I think, keeps us, with those essential virtues you need of humility, of patience. It keeps us grounded, lest we kind of, our natural tendencies towards selfishness or self-absorbedness might kind of centrifuge might kind of get us off track.
Mm-hmm.
It kind of keeps us grounded and connected. And so I think the brotherhood really does that for our life. And even if there aren't large numbers of folks who are brothers, to have those who are still discerning that and for whom it's a possibility, I think adds a richness certainly to our whole project of preaching, for sure, in many ways. Yeah.
And I've been really glad to see, in the last 2 years at least, different vocation candidates who come and they say, well, I'm not sure if I'm called to the priesthood or the brotherhood. So they ask me questions. They're open to learning and to saying, I don't have everything planned out. I want to know what God has planned for me.
Nice. So on the one hand, you'll get Father Michael James. On the other hand, though, you might get, especially as these new guys, the new 10 novices here, they ask you if you're one of the new novices too, right?
Oh, yes. That happens quite a bit. So when we were celebrating First Vows at the beginning of September over at St. Albert's, and one of our sisters who's working over at Marin Catholic came up to me and she said, oh, brother, what's it like to be a novice? And I said, well, it was great 11 years ago.
You do have that youthful vision, right? I would take that as a compliment.
Yeah, I did. I was like, oh, thank you.
The gray has not invaded your beard as it has mine yet. So you can still hold on to that. You'll look back on the day when people used to mistake you for a novice. I think, enjoy it while you can. So after you made Solomon solemn vows. So, of course, kind of, if you will, the completion of fraternity comes with solemn vows because you're not ordained in that way. But then in just a wonderful gift to the province, you started doing some ministry around technology and website. Just how did that come? Because I don't know if you have any special degrees in that, but you really jumped in with 2 feet and brought our technological game as a province to a new level. So how did that come about?
Yeah, so my background when I was in college was originally as a communication major.
Okay.
And I was planning to go into print journalism. But I'm really thankful that God steered me away because I'm not sure I'd have a job at this
point. No, that's probably true. Yeah.
With the size of newspapers shrinking and things like that.
Yeah.
But I had that background. I was also, I eventually ended up changing to religious studies, which means I didn't complete the communication. I just switched and had to do all these classes towards the end of my time. Fit them all in order to graduate. So I have kind of that background in communication and religious studies. And
nice.
When Father Mark, our provincial, came to me and said, you know, if you're going to be a brother, then we need you to be participating in the life, obviously, of the province and the ministries and things like that. And he said, we really need a webmaster to help get our site updated. We hadn't had a site update for quite a number of years. And just to know the technology, especially with social media and being able to do that and being able to coordinate with our development team and our vocation director and all these different people. And I had those skills, so I was able to bring that in, and I took a class in HTML and CSS just to learn to be able to do some things in the background. Thankfully, we had some really good people who were our builders, so I didn't have to spend all this time doing code and things like that, but was able to focus on, well, what's our content going to be, and reaching out to the friars and saying, well, what are you doing in this place, and what are we highlighting over here, and what are all the different ministries out there that people should know the province are involved in?
Yeah, no, and I think in my experience, so I was obviously here before. There's kind of like it's you know, BMJ and after MJ, just like before Michael James got a hold of the website, which was like a wasteland and not much going, not much there. And now our website, the opwest.org, and Facebook, and just interaction through social media is just really fantastic. I think, and not you want to compare, but in terms of looking at other site, like religious order sites and even our own Dominicans in different places in the provinces, we definitely are getting the word out there and have a kind of vibrant dynamic with interaction with people.
Yeah, I think something that really helped was when I took on the job was working as a team. I think before that, the webmasters had always been a priest of the province who's also doing other ministries and other jobs.
That's
and
true.
Didn't really have a lot of support.
Yeah.
So my coming in and bringing in Casey O'Leary, our digital media director, who does a lot of our video stuff, and then working with Chris Hanzelli, our development director, and Father Steve Maria, our vocation director, all of us really communicated with one another and said, okay, well, what are we going to do, and what do we need, and what are young people, or what are just the people around the province, how are they going to connect with us,
nice.
And how are we going to make their experience on the website more friendly, more user-friendly, but then also just something that they would appreciate using and coming back to.
Nice. So in terms of just if people aren't familiar, once again, I say opwest.org, is that's the
username? Right, that's the province website.
And what kinds of things might one find there?
Yeah, so our events, so when we have things like ordinations or first vows or solemn vows.
Or we just had vestition.
We just had vestition. Yeah. Well, vestition is private, but anything that's a public event, that's a big event for the province, we usually have up there for people to check out. We have profiles of different friars in the province, different saints of the order, things like that. We'll have news pieces, so just special things that happen around the province. Where here in San Francisco, we might not be aware that they did some. They had a few years ago, Holy Family in Anchorage celebrated their jubilee.
Oh yeah,
so
jubilee,
things like
yeah.
that, right? So those sorts of things, and then features too. So we have different things either about Dominican life or sometimes a few years ago I wrote a story about the nature of freedom. And so sometimes there'll be kind of small theological reflections. So never a big read. It's their blogs, right? So it's just things for people to kind of get a taste of, and then they can do their own research after that.
Sure.
Things like our vocations page. So it has information for guys who are discerning. There's a place to find out different ways people can can donate to the province either towards formation or towards our elderly and infirm friars who have served all over and now in their 70s, 80s, things like that. They're the ones who need some care. So how can we support them?
Yeah, and those are two real key things that I've seen even in the time that you've been my master that have really kind of taken off. First of all, vocations. I would say just, this is anecdotal, but I would say at least half of our vocations, at least were not inspired by, but just connected with, first through the website, right? Because I think gone are the days when we have a sense that, you know, we have like a school that is going to, like, people come to the school and suddenly they've kind of discovered their vocation, like the minor seminaries or even, you know, when we're in parishes that have elementary school, it's not as if an elementary school experience necessarily translates in this day and age into a religious vocation, right? There's usually people go off to college, they, you know, have an experience, they live a little, and then in that context, it's kind of discerned. And so where do people find out information on the website, right? And so, it's I think one of the key factors of being able to both stimulate and raise vocational awareness. And I think in terms of vocation, even though you're not, or as webmaster, weren't vocation director per se, it really, I think the website is, if you will, that supportive vocation instrument. And that's really caused our, I mean, we have 10 novices this year, and I don't know if we'd have 10 novices, honestly, if it wasn't for the website.
Right. I mean, I remember going to a conference and one of the presenters basically said, if your religious order, your group is not online, then people are not going to be able to find you.
Yep,
they're not getting the different vocation magazines anymore.
Yep.
They're not kind of looking for orders or discerning that way. They're going online and they're typing in the order they're interested in or some component of the life that they have a question about. So you have to have stuff out there that they can find.
Yeah, no. So that's been a big gift. And then the other thing is just how to support. You know, so many people will have an idea of, okay, looking for a cause that's worthy to contribute to financially or otherwise, and to be able to just make people aware of, for instance, we are in many, obviously in diocese, but the diocese don't support us at all in terms of our friars or our vocations or our novices. All the support that we give has to come from within our own order.
Right.
And we have, for instance, the retirement fund for the diocese is actually this coming up in this next week. That doesn't support any of our retired folks. The only way we can raise money for, at least have support, you know, folks like Father Tommy Hayes and even you mentioned Brother Daniel is through our these own instruments of putting out donations and a sense of the need. And the website is once again a real key factor in that.
Yeah, and one of the things that kind of helped, especially with the elderly, the last 2 years are Giving Tuesday campaign, which some people know about. Giving Tuesday is the Tuesday after Thanksgiving. It's an opportunity to give online to charitable organizations. The last 2 years, we've made that for us to support our elderly friars. And then a few years ago, some people may remember we had Fast Friars Run. So some of our brothers ran a half marathon.
I remember that, yeah.
And even our nuns at Corpus Christi Monastery in Menlo Park were supportive of that. And so people were able to give, and all that money went towards our elderly and infirm friars.
Nice, yeah.
So, and that was a real gift. And it's something I really appreciate about our order. When I talk to guys who may come and visit for vocations and things like that, they said they'll go to other places and they'll only see the young guys.
Yeah.
They won't see this mix, which is all of our communities have this mix of young guys and older guys. So you gain the wisdom from the older guys.
Yep.
You see the zeal and excitement from the younger guys.
Yep.
And it's something that really brings us together.
It's like a multi-generational family, right?
Right.
In a sense, right? You've got everyone living under one roof towards the same goal, but just with a sense of the youthfulness of life and the experience, or, the, as you say, the wisdom and sagacity of life. And so now that you've, obviously did wonderful work on the website, and now Casey, I think, is taking over, is that right?
Yes.
And giving you the opportunity. We had certainly a opportunity open up here at St. Dominic's for our community service program and outreach program. And I approached Brother Michael James, and he said, let's do it. So I couldn't be more pleased. So maybe talk a little bit about kind of your new role here and that sense of opportunity, and just as you come into it, what some of your hopes might be for the St. Dominic's ministry you're taking now hires you join us on staff.
Yes. Yeah. So I'm really excited to be working with the Lima Center and St. Dominic's Community Outreach and all the different programs that we have. Just in this last week, I've learned so much about what's there. And I think a lot of people don't even necessarily know.
Yeah.
They might know what the Lima Center is, that it's downstairs, yeah. You know, under the church, but they don't realize, you know, we may feed 30 to 50 homeless men and women who come in on a given Tuesday or Thursday when we have breakfast and lunch. During the rainy, cold season, we're going to open up some rooms for people to sleep overnight. Yeah. And that's a great gift to them to be able to get out of the rain, to yep. actually be able to have a full night's sleep. And someplace warm and someplace quiet.
And we look for folks who can be kind of, if you will, chaperones or folks that can spend the evening with them.
And I've talked to some of the gentlemen who have been volunteers on that in the past to be in the room. And they said, it's such a moving experience to hear some of these guys' stories, to learn more about their experience and what they've gone through and to be able to pray with them. And I think that's such a gift, not only to our guests that come in, but also to our parishioners to be able to make that connection that most of the time you don't get to make.
Yeah, for sure.
So seeing that, working with the different schools in the area, I'd like to connect more with the high schools and young people, again, youth ministry.
Youth ministry, I love it. Yeah.
To let them know that they can help in different ways. So we've got some students already who contacted us about wanting to do a clothes drive.
Nice.
And I know Sister Ann Providence from our Dominican Sisters of San Rafael loves doing the canned food drive before Thanksgiving
with
the kids over at Mission Dolores Academy. There's so many opportunities and ways for people to get involved beyond just coming down to the Lima Center and necessarily cooking or serving. There's different things that they can do, and that's something I want to highlight this year and let people know. You can get involved.
Yes.
And you can help support this amazing ministry in the parish, but also in our community as a whole. We started this partnership with St. Ignatius Church, working with Deanna, our case manager, to help more people who come in and who need assistance either with rent or utilities or food stamps, all these sorts of things. She helps take them through that process. And that's a great gift because a lot of times, if you don't know how it works, it can just be a lot of red tape and bureaucracy and you get lost.
The system can be frustrating, right? Right. You'd be like, how do I get housing? Yeah. Or even we've had in this past year since Deanna came on to help us with some of the more specific ways about connecting with the city about housing. We've some folks who have come to our Lima Center, she said, a kind of food program, and not just food, but just they can take a shower, they can do laundry, they can work on the computer, just a kind of a drop-in place where there's safety, there's a connection of community, and there's nourishment in different mm-hmm. ways. But most of those folks are homeless. They don't have a home. And yet we've been able to get a handful over the past, I'd say, year and a half, folks to find housing if they're willing. Not everyone is willing. Everyone's in a different stage, and perhaps they're not at a stage there. But if they're eager to try to find a roof over their heads, we have kind of taken our availability to the next level to be able to try to help them through that somewhat, mm-hmm. as you say, daunting process of how does that actually work? How can we coordinate? We don't obviously here at St. Dominic's have, you know, apartments or housing ourselves outside of the priory, but we can, as you say, the winter shelter, just kind of like intermediate space, but more importantly, try to make connections with housing developments that might be open and available through the city and other charitable organizations like Catholic Charities and other places.
Yeah, and I think that's something that a lot of people don't realize either, that our guests, some of our guests might not be homeless.
Yeah, that's
but,
true.
But, I mean, the cost of living in San Francisco, as I'm sure many people know, is really expensive.
Yes.
So sometimes it's just helping them with food and mm-hmm. helping them go from month to month and meet some of those basic needs and necessities, especially if they have kids and families, to be able to help the kids with school supplies or backpacks, things like that. And a lot of these things come from our giving tree during Advent, Christmas time,
yes.
and all the people who are able to give gift cards and things like that. I mean, that isn't just at Christmas. It can last the whole year, depending on how much we get and how generous people are. And so that's something that can be inspiring to see and to let people know you can do something not only in the holidays, but all year long.
Yeah, no, in a sense of giving, as you say, there's those peak times of giving, but depending on what give, I mean, we got several thousand dollars worth of gift cards that we used at Christmas for gifts and things. But those, I was helping, you know, when someone comes into the office and they're just looking for get some food, is give them a Safeway card. Mm-hmm. You know, just give them. There's easy ways to be able to help folks in a way that we, I don't want to say not take for granted, but don't consider. And when you put it out there, I mean, and I'm sure you'll find this too as you take on that sense of ministry and directorship. People are so generous here. Mm-hmm. we have our job is to make known what needs are out there and how they can help.
Right.
Yeah.
And then to funnel that generosity from our community to those who really need it.
That's right. That's right.
And it's more. I think some people at times worry that we're not really helping the homeless if we're just giving them things. And that's not how we look at it. We're helping them find what they need so that they can do what they need to, so that they can work, or so that they can, again, meet with the people they need to find housing and things like that. So it's a process for a lot of people. And a lot of our guests, you know, they volunteer here around the parish, maybe helping with the garden or yes. cleaning up trash. So they want to give back. They're thankful for what they receive.
I always am edified by the fact that sometimes there'll be someone who is in the church that for whatever reason, even they have some mental issues or they're just in a rough place in life. When they'll be looking to make some mischief in the church, either, you know, breaking candles or doing something. And oftentimes it will be some of our guests who will come to the office and say, "Hey, there's someone out there that I'm trying to run them off." In other words, mm-hmm. they'll have such a care for even the community itself. They yeah. themselves not necessarily having permanent housing or being homeless or being down kind of down in terms of financial, but they when they see something going on in the church that someone's making mischief there, they'll be eager to like say, "Hey, this shouldn't be," and they kind of almost mm-hmm. try to police other, you know, be their own sense of security for that.
Right.
It really is wonderful to know that they feel that same. St. Dominic's is certainly, if not a spiritual home, at least a place of nourishment and safety and security. And they don't want any of that to go away because someone else is kind of abusing it or taking mm-hmm. advantage of it. So
yeah.
It's always in my that sense of, you know, that you're making a difference, or at least there's a real sense of God's blessing when they take ownership. It's not mm-hmm. just you're not just giving something to someone in that process. They're actually taking ownership of the place itself.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, it's good. And we just think from that gospel where Jesus says, whatever you do for the least, you do to me. So the sense that we ourselves respond to Christ in terms of giving. And so I know our website at St. Dominic's is transition for that sense of you've done website stuff, but we have on our homepage, there's an opportunity to volunteer. And I know you'll be hopefully populating some of that page on some of the needs that we have here for Lima.
Right. Yeah. So we're working on that, trying to get a better sense of exactly what we need and what we can have people help with. So not only times where they can come in and volunteer and maybe cook or serve, greet, mm-hmm. things like that, but also just the basic needs that we have. So things like the lunch sacks that we prepare and
yeah.
the different items for that, or just the cereal for breakfast in the morning, things like that. So I'm hoping to get kind of a shopping list up and people can go on and buy and ship directly to the parish, or obviously if they're out shopping at Costco or Smart and Final or something like that and they want to pick something up and drop it off, they can do that too. But we're hoping to get that up in the next few weeks. So
yeah, no, and I'm excited to have it up there because I think one of our biggest costs as we face this is just food prices. I mean, mm-hmm. in the city and gas and all the rest. And so people's like, "Oh, I can't necessarily come and help serve lunch on a Tuesday or a Thursday afternoon, but I can, you know, help with, you know, getting the some of the food stuffs or the packaging or something like that."
Right.
That can be, you know, if not directly present through their financial support and really kind of helping out for the community for sure.
Yeah, and prayers too. I mean,
yes.
that's a big thing people forget. Every day now when we have office, I don't always say it out loud, but under my breath,
yeah. it's
for the hungry and the homeless
yes.
that I'm seeing every day and those that I don't see every day.
Yeah.
To be praying for them and hoping that other people are moved to care and show Christ's love to them and to radiate the joy, as we talked about
go.
Here at the parish, that
Amen.
They will see
yeah.
that joy in us as they interact. And just sometimes as you're walking past an individual on the street to be able to say hello. And if you don't have time to say hello, but at least to say a prayer for them as you go by, can be a real gift, and maybe will help their day a little bit.
To treat them as a person. Yeah. Oftentimes people say, you know, I feel bad. I walk past someone who's asking for money and I may or may not feel safe. I may or may not give them money. If I don't, I feel bad about myself. It's one of the frequent questions I get asked about, mm-hmm. you know, how should we treat someone who's, you know, panhandling, especially if they're doing it in an aggressive manner or mm-hmm. I feel bad about it. But just, as you say, just treating them as a human being is perhaps the best way to start, looking them in the eyes, smiling, even if you don't or don't feel comfortable giving them money. If you have some, you know, article of food or some just a kind word certainly it shouldn't be undervalued.
Yeah. Well, I only carry my wallet when I drive.
Yeah,
my driver's
exactly.
license. So most of the time
cash.
I don't have cash.
Exactly.
Or money.
Yeah.
But I can ask the individual, well, what's your name?
Yeah.
Can I pray for you?
Sort of
thing. And they appreciate that.
Yeah.
To know that someone is thinking of them and cares about them as a person, not just sees them as an indigent on the side of the road.
That's right. Yeah. So. No, very good. Good. Well, no, I'm so excited to take it. I'm sure you just started this, it's been about a couple of weeks, not mm-hmm. even. So I'm excited that you've come aboard. I look forward to kind of taking our community service to God's, to what the Holy Spirit's calling us to do. So that energy and passion and the youthfulness that you have. Is there anything about, maybe I put you on the spot here, anything about you that would be interesting to know? I know, for example, things that people might not know about you that the community benefits from is you are an amazing pastry chef. Anytime there's a birthday or a feast day or some kind of holiday, there's always some little goody down there.
Yeah. Like,
you know, thanks to Brother Michael James. Is that a hobby of yours or a passion?
Yeah, I really enjoy baking. My aunt, who passed away a number of years ago, actually studied here at the Culinary Institute in San Francisco.
Oh, really?
She took the pastry class.
Yeah, yeah.
So she showed me a lot of things when I was growing up, and I remember being in the kitchen with her and baking things. And so some of my recipes are her recipes.
It's an homage to
our family recipes, or just things I'll see online, and I'll be like, oh, I want to try this.
You know,
I can be creative. You are very creative when it comes to cooking and like figuring out some of these different flavors that I would never think of. For me, there's a science to baking.
Yes.
You always have to be particular about proportions and things like that. And so it's really fun for me to see how exactly does this work and how does this come together. So
we certainly appreciate it. I think I don't know if brothers come to you and give you their wish list for birthdays, but it seems like you always know the right thing to make for birthdays.
Father Dismas has come up with a few different things that are way too complicated.
Well, what did he come up with out of curiosity?
There's a German cake that's kind of multiple layers, similar to like a crepe, but it's very complicated, and he's asked for it a few times and he's like, I don't think so. I was like, if Father Anselm doesn't know how to make it, there's no way I'm going to figure it out.
Okay, there you go. But you are. Do you have a favorite pastry that you like to make?
I really enjoy pie. But I think that's
pie.
Because I enjoy eating the pie as much as making the pie.
Like a fruit pie or
chocolate. So, and especially as we get into, you know, this time of year, pumpkin pie and pecan pie. I really like hazelnut pie
because
it has, you know, the nuttiness of a pecan pie, but it's just a different texture and things like that.
Very nice. I don't know if I've ever had hazelnut pie.
I think maybe we'll have to
I think we've got our Thanksgiving dessert menu starting to shape up here. Very good. Well, Brother Michael James, it's fantastic to have you with us on our week and our show this week. In terms of our website, stdominics.org is how you might be able to find out how to volunteer through our Tiny Helper, the volunteer page. And if folks want to get connected directly to you, how might they reach out to you if they want to volunteer or have an idea or
to be involved? They can send an email. It's bromichaeljames@stdominics.org.
So that's B-R?
B-R-O.
B-R-O. Bro.
Bro.
Oh,
Michael
nice.
James.
Michael James.
At stdominics.org.
Okay, bromichaeljames@stdominics.org.
Send an email there. Or obviously call the office. There's not a phone on my side of the desk yet. We're working on our receptionist can always
it will
pass
be here,
that along. So.
For sure. Very good. Once again, thanks for being here. I look forward, and we'll be the beginning of many creative, powerful experiences here at St. Dominic's. And for all of our listeners, may all that you do truly radiate the joy of the gospel here in the heart of the city. Amen.
Amen.